talk a little bit at one point, Matthew, about... Oh, shoot, it just went right out of my head.
I did.
What I'm saying.
Sure, I did talk about that.
About, yeah, thank you.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres, styles, and types of books, irregardless of our actual interest in them. My name is Anna Ferry, and along with Matthew Murray, we will be your regular hosts for this discussion. Today, we have with us our wonderful friends and guest hosts, Megan White and Amanda Warner. Megan, introduce yourself.
Hi, so I'm a public librarian by trade at the moment, and I have the reading taste of a magpie.
And my name is Amanda. I'm a new health librarian, and I have an interest in reader's advisory. How that's going to fit with health librarianship, I have no idea.
So, Megan, you only read shiny things?
Yes.
Okay. Just you're like, if the book has a shiny cover, you're like all about it.
Just whatever I see in my sights.
Yeah, fabulous. All right, so I thought we'd get going by having each of us say what it is that you read for Gothic fiction. And does anybody want to volunteer to start? No? Oh my gosh, the light panic looks on everyone's faces.
I'll go.
It's pretty frequent, like, appearance in our book club, though. Just who's the fear and panic.
I have to talk now. Okay, so the first piece that I read was The Castle of Otranto by Horace Walpole, and it was written in 1764. And it's thought of by many people as one of the first pieces of Gothic fiction that was written. It was a little difficult to get into, just in terms of writing style, and the characters weren't terribly sympathetic or understandable for a modern reader. Next, I read a couple of more modern pieces, A Great and Terrible Beauty by Libra Bray, which is 2003, and it's more of a YA, first book in a trilogy. It's more about the occult and young women and getting into trouble and stuff like that, but it includes a gypsy, which seemed to be one of the characters you often see in Gothic. The next one was The Diviners, also by Libba Bray in 2012.
Is it Libba or Libby?
It has an A at the end.
Oh, okay. I always thought it was Libby Bray, but maybe I just, like, have it. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's the other Gothic fiction author.
So this one was more of a ghost story, kind of, where you had a devil character who's causing problems. It was set in the 1920s, but definitely the ghostly atmosphere of fear and this oncoming, like, you know, badness is coming, and you're not sure whether it's a spiritual or a supernatural element, or like a serial killer or something like that. So it was very engaging, very thrilling. The third one I read in that was more modern was Marina by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. I might be butchering that name, I don't know. It's 2012, and this is set in Spain, and it's sort of a takeoff of the Frankenstein type of story. So man playing with science in order to prolong his life in that kind of sense. The last one I read was also another classic called The Monk by Matthew Gregory Lewis. 1796 is the version that I read. And this is another Englishman, and it's been termed masculine Gothic by some people. I guess because the main character is male. Spoiler alert, he falls to the devil. And the whole story is about his corruption, and then there's a few other, like, romance stories going on, but I think the main one is actually the monk and his corruption and his fall.
Yay. So, Megan, how many books was that?
That was 5 books.
Do you like Gothic fiction, or are you just really masochistic?
No, I think a bunch of these were actually on my to-read list without being deliberately picked out as Gothic, and I think this is something we've talked about before, but Gothic seems to cover a whole range of subgenres. So things like horror, things like ghost stories, things like paranormal, supernatural kind of thing. So it's fairly easy to read something in the Gothic sort of the overall category without realizing that it is. The only one specifically I read because they were Gothic was Castle of Otranto and The Monk, which was an effort.
Well, anyway, I'm impressed.
I feel as though the older Gothic stuff, like the stuff where the term Gothic literature came from, like the stuff in the 18th and 19th century, was only called Gothic literature because they didn't have horror literature and they didn't have science fiction or fantasy literature.
Right. That's totally possible, yeah.
It is actually possible to read several, though, because a lot of them that were published in that era were kind of like novellas.
Yeah, and shorter.
Quite short.
Shorter.
But anyway, I'm impressed. So,
why are we talking about your books next,
I know.
Amanda?
Well, I read three books, but the only reason I read three full books was because I felt guilty that I didn't read very many historical romance books last month. I barely even made an attempt, I'm sorry. But I read three books this month, and then I attempted a fourth and gave it up pretty quickly. So the first one I read was The Turn of the Screw, sort of a classic gothic novel by Henry James. I didn't like it very much. I had some of the same issues that Megan was discussing with the Castle of...
Otranto.
That one. where I didn't really know how I was supposed to feel about the novel. It's about this nursemaid. She goes to this, like, ghostly castle to take care of two kids, and she becomes, like, increasingly paranoid throughout the novel that the kids are, like, meeting with ghosts and they're gonna take away the children's pure souls with these, like, evil ghosts. But I just felt like maybe she had a mental illness and, like, needed some benzos. You know, so I don't know. I wasn't sure if people who were reading it in, you know, the 1800s would have been, like, laughing at the nursemaid and thinking, oh, this is really funny, because there's never any really solid evidence for any of the ghosts, right? Or whether people reading it during that era would have been, like, totally sympathetic, like, oh my god, that ghost is going to, like, you know, tarnish these children's souls. So I was just confused, really. The second one I read was The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters. Mm. And that was written just a couple years ago, but it's pretty much, like, straight-up classic gothic ghost story. I actually really enjoyed it, even though it was, like, 500 pages. And it's kind of different than her other stuff she's done.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask if you'd read other...
Well, Sarah Waters, all of her novels are historic, but she's really known for those, like, lesbian historical romances. So, actually, the first time... I started reading The Little Stranger, like, two years ago.
Wait. How come you didn't read one of her historical romances last month?
She tried. It did not go well.
Did I?
You said you'd fingersmith.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it was an idea in my head. I never actually, like, picked up the novel or, like, made
it. I thought you had it and read the first page and, like, put it down.
Years ago. Okay. She's hard to get into. I thought she was really boring. But anyway, I tried to read The Little Stranger, like, 2 years ago or a couple years ago when it first came out, and, like, I got, like, a third of it in, and I was like, where's the lesbian romance? Because that's all she ever does, right? So I didn't really realize the first time I read it that there's no lesbian romance. But, this one's pretty much, like, a straight-up classic gothic ghost story. There's a haunted house and, you know, paranoia and an old doctor, and it's awesome. So I really like that one. I would recommend it. And it doesn't have some of the problems that some of the other ones have where... you don't know what's going on using the old-fashioned language, like it's written today, so it's a little easier to follow. The last one I read was We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson. That one was written sort of in the 1960s. I would say We Have Always Lived in the Castle is not so much gothic as maybe it has gothic elements. It was a little bit read like psychological horror, kind of. There's no paranoia, there's no ghosts, but there is, like, this really creepy, like, young girl who kills her whole family. So, and feels like no remorse. So it's kind of it's a creepy book.
Is that a spoiler alert moment?
No, you know that.
Okay, early on.
Yeah. There is a twist, but...
Oh.
I won't say what
that is. We are now intrigued.
It's a short and easy read, I'd recommend it, but I wouldn't say it's sort of a classic gothic.
Yeah. Well, gothic, yeah. Because I've heard of it before quite a bit, so I feel like it is a little bit of a, you know, a classic of sort of more of a horror genre,
yeah.
But it is, I mean, like, you already mentioned, Megan, that we talked a little bit about gothic leads into horror and all these other genres, and yeah.
It gets messy really fast. There's like, genre creep, I feel, with the gothic. So anyway, I've never read any Shirley Jackson before, and I'm now inspired. I might read some more of it. So then I've got my bonus book that I did not read, which I checked out this book called The Hollow, and that was purely because I went to the Vancouver Public Library's catalog and just, like, went to their subject headings, like, what they'd categorized as gothic, and I just sort of randomly checked it out. The Hollow, it's a YA novel, and I read the first, like, five pages, and I thought I was reading Twilight. It just starts out with this girl who has this, like, creepy, pale guy following her around after the burial of her best friend, and I was just like, yeah, no, not gonna read this. So that was my bonus one that I would not really recommend. Okay, Anna or Matthew?
I'll go next. So the first one I read one by an author that Megan also read, one by Carlos Ruiz Zafón, and I'm sure I'm also mispronouncing that. So I said I read The Shadow of the Wind, which was from 2001, and I don't think you mentioned that these are translated from Spanish.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Well, maybe yours wasn't, but mine was translated from Spanish, okay, at the very least. And I thought this was interesting because I was kind of under the impression that, I don't know if the impression is the right word, but like I feel like Gothic literature seems really English.
Well, a lot of it's German, right? German
it's Gothic. It's set in Germany a lot of the time, but I don't know if any were written by, like, other people.
Yeah, this is a moment where we, like, admit straight up that we are in no way experts about any of these genres, nor did we do in-depth research.
No.
We were like, all right, go at it.
We read a couple Wiki
articles. I really wanted to.
Yeah, I know. I know. Few articles on the web.
Yeah.
No, but I was thinking, I feel like the Germanic roots are in there, mm-hmm, because there's a lot of fairy tales that, like, they had very horrific style folk tales and fairy tales, and they had a tradition of that. And, I mean, if you think of, like, I don't know if it's pronounced Undine or Undine or whatever that is. It, like, that kind of tale was in there that maybe didn't have the tradition in the same way in English. And then you add this romanticism and the Keats and Byron and Shelley, and you add all that into there, and you get what we consider Gothic fiction. But that's just my, like, guesstimating.
I think the classic stuff is considered more British, at least in the short introduction I was reading beforehand, desperately. And also, I just wanted to mention that Matthew Gregory Lewis, the guy who wrote The Monk, is actually considered to have plagiarized enormous amounts of German stories and things within The Monk itself. So that's a pretty key point.
There were definitely, like, 19th century American writers of Gothic fiction, though, because Edgar Allan Poe is frequently included in those lists. So it's not...
Oh, for sure. I just mean, like, the starting 1780s, 90s, whatever thing seems to be considered a British thing.
That's fair.
So tell us a little more about Shadow of the Wind.
So,
or Of the Wind, or whatever it was. Give me the prepositions correct for me here.
The Shadow of the Wind. Singular Wind, I believe.
Okay.
So it seemed more like a book about a Gothic story than an actual Gothic story itself. So it included all of the elements of Gothic fiction that I kind of expected. Doomed romances, so many doomed romances, actually. forbidden love, self-destructing and decaying families, suicides, incest, murder, self-hatred on a truly epic scale, crumbling bridges, lies, falsehoods, and misunderstandings. I have a list here.
Charming book.
A creepy guy with all of his skin burnt off who haunts the background occasionally. It has all of these elements, and you're like, oh yeah, this sounds really Gothic, except it's just like about this kid kind of walking around 1950s Spain and finding out about all of these things that happened like 30 years previously.
Mm-hmm.
So there were definitely elements of Gothic fiction in it, but I was just like, I think the way the story was told, where things are getting revealed like slowly in chunks, made it seem not so Gothic to me.
Took some of the immediacy, the dread, away from it. Because a lot of Gothic fiction is sort of, we talked a bit before about it being paranoia fiction, and that sense of dread and worry. And so I'm wondering,
I think that's a good word, the immediacy. Just the sheer emotion of, like, this is happening now.
Yeah, and the building and building and building of that kind of...
Can gotta get overwhelming, too, as a reader.
Because that was the biggest part, I think, of the turn of the screw. It just built up and built up. She just got more and more paranoid throughout the book, right?
But I think one of the reasons for this is because it's from 2001, so it's a recent book. And so writing a, like, traditional Gothic story in, like, a normal narrative is probably less appealing to a lot of writers.
Yeah, and it lends itself towards parody at that point.
And so writing... It led itself to parody, like, the 19th century with, like, Northanger Abbey.
Northanger Abbey.
Right.
So it was... Interesting. There were bits where I was just kind of confused by what was going on. There were pages and pages that were just in italics, and I could never figure out why. And, like, there were a lot of, like, stories within stories, and at one point I remember character A is reading a letter written by character B that is telling the story of character C, who is listening to a tale told by character D, and this letter also describes how a dead person felt as they died. Like, as in first person, like, I felt really bad as I fell through that window and died. And I was just like, I'm not, like, is this actually a letter at this point? Like, I was just kind of confused by that.
Yeah, that's kind of a mindfuck.
It was, except it didn't seem like it was designed to be
Maybe it
sort of sounds postmodern to me.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I do wonder, like, how much of this is based on the translation?
And but still, I mean, there's a structure there. It's a letter. Yeah.
So I didn't enjoy that one very much.
Fair enough.
There were definitely elements I enjoyed, and even, like, imagery. There was a really great imagery of this guy is kind of breaking into this old abandoned home, and there's a pond outside, and a statue that was in the garden has fallen into the pond so that only a hand of the statue sticks out from the water. Mm. And I was like, that's an awesome image. And then it's just like, not.
Yeah, some nice images.
Yeah. So the second one I read was, I don't know if I could really classify it as a gothic story. It is definitely a sequel to a gothic story. So I read Anno Dracula by Kim Newman, which was first published in 1992, and they've been reprinted a few years ago, and a bunch of sequels have come out and stuff as well. And so this is one set after, it takes the events of the Dracula novel by Bram Stoker, and instead of it ending with Dracula being killed, it ends with Dracula escapes, and then he marries Queen Victoria.
As one does, when one doesn't get killed.
Yeah, exactly. No, he's like, he's a foreign prince, he does something, and it's not really explained how this managed. It's like, that happened, let's just move ahead. And so, being a vampire is now, like, all hip in England. And so a lot
he
of the
royals do?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, a lot of the aristocrats are vampires, and, like, it's kind of seen as, like, oh, you kind of need to be a vampire to, like, you know, to get ahead in society, and...
Is this a graphic novel?
No, this is a novel, an actual novel.
Okay.
But it did remind me a lot of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen graphic novels, although this came after those, because it takes elements from basically every vampire story ever, and takes all of the characters and puts them into this one novel.
Wait, which came first? The
Anno Dracula came first. Oh. And so, okay. Like, what is it, like, Carmilla, and, like, Varney the Vampire, and Blackula, and, like, literally, like, every
What's
vampire.
Blackula?
Black Dracula.
I don't know what this is.
It's like a blaxploitation movie.
Okay. Oh. Then that makes it into Anno Dracula with Queen Victoria.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And also, like, there's real people, and so Bram Stoker is mentioned, and Oscar Wilde is a vampire, and...
See, that I really enjoy. Well, actually, the mixing of the imaginary characters and the real.
And then there's also characters from, like, Prisoner of Zenda. Do you guys know that one?
Nope.
It's like a 19th century, like, adventure fiction thing. Set in, like, a mythical Eastern European country. Not mythical, like a fake Eastern European country. Tied up in all of this is also the Jack the Ripper murders are happening. Except they're not a mystery in this. It's, like, it's being done by, like, a... You know who's doing it. And so there's, like, the search for who's doing that, and... just surviving in this vampire-led society, and some of the characters from Dracula appear. And so one of them has become a vampire, and is kind of just being like, okay, I'm just going to have to kind of get used to being in this vampire society. And another one is not a vampire, and he's, like, kind of insane. And it's just like, because his wife is the character who'd been turned into a vampire in Dracula, and he had killed her, and then being a vampire was fine. And so he's just like, oh, I killed my wife for no reason. Great.
So this kind of feels like the other novel you read, though, in the sense that it's not really a gothic novel. It just kind of throws together every single gothic thing it can think of into one novel.
So, I think so.
So is this a gothic novel?
Let's talk about that later.
All right. I know that's a really big question, but it's a theme that came up a lot when we were talking originally about all the books we read, what is gothic and what isn't gothic, right? So that's kind of been in the back of my head.
So the third one I read was The Beetle by Richard Marsh, and this was actually one from the 19th century. So it came out in 1897, and it came out about the same time as Dracula did. And it was actually a lot more popular than Dracula when it first came out, which is really interesting.
Which is fun. Yeah, because it's not like, I've never heard of The Beetle.
It was like in print up until like continuously. It went through loads of printing and stuff up until like the 60s, and then just people stopped caring.
Wonder why.
I don't like...
Doesn't have the central, like, does it have a central figure as, this is easy to kind of hang a lot of mythology onto as Dracula's? Like,
yeah, there's a bad, it's super racist as well. It's tied up in a lot of Egyptian mysticism and stuff, but it's, like, super racist. It's just like, oh, those Egyptians, they are, like, pretty awful. And it's also, like, I don't know if transphobic is really the word to use, but, like, there's kind of, like, some gender misunderstandings, and it's not really portrayed. In regards to, like, the bad guy. So anyway, so it starts with
this homeless person wandering through the streets of London, and he climbs through the window of this house, and he ends up being mesmerized. This story is all about mesmerism by this entity, this being that lives in the house. And he then is sent to rob from this politician's house. And this politician is clearly has wronged the bad guy in some way. You're not told how. It's just like, you have to go do this. And it's kind of hilarious because the entity, the mesmerist, is like, oh, you're a thief. You broke into my house. And the guy's like, no, I'm a clerk. I'm just, like, lost my job. And he's like, you will go and rob. And he's like, I don't know how to rob anything. And so there's, like, I thought it was kind of like, there was this comic element to this bit, and I don't know if that was really intended. And then he goes off and does actually manage to steal it. But then it's interesting because the story is split into four parts. And so this is the first part told from this character's point of view. And then the second part switches to a completely different character who is sort of a rival of the politician for this girl's affection. And so a bunch of this part, and then the third part, which is the girl of their affection, is like kind of references the mesmerism and the gothic stuff, but is more just about like going to society balls and talking about politics. Like, I'm pretty sure they go to the House of Commons at least twice to listen to the politician dude give speeches.
Boring.
It is pretty dull.
They didn't have the internet.
Where do you find these books?
Somebody recommended this to me. Someone who actually, I believe, is doing a degree in Gothic literature.
Ah.
Why didn't we get them on?
Yeah. We don't go for experts.
This is a strictly amateur literature hour.
So that was one of the things about reading old books, and I think you guys said the same thing. It's like reading something written in the 18th century, the 19th century, is such a different style than mm-hmm. we're used to nowadays that it's like kind of overwhelming to get used to, like, the word choice and kind of the slowness of them a lot of the time as well. So it was strange. Anyway, the final part switches to an entirely new character who has never been mentioned before. And he's, like, sort of a detective sort of character. And this reminded me weirdly kind of, like, a Neil Gaiman story or a Susanna Clarke story or something sort of, like, in that gentleman doing magic sort of way, in that there's these guys and they're just kind of chasing all over London trying to exploring abandoned houses and like tearing up floorboards and like interrogating old women who are creepy and desperately trying to catch trains and all of this. Like, it's so different from the other parts, and it's kind of weird. But I actually, the last part, like, I enjoyed it more than like the romance parts, which is kind of obvious in general. So then I did read a couple of gothic literature-ish graphic novels as well, like comics. And so the first one was Gothic Classics, which is a collection of adaptations of old gothic literature stuff. And I read the adaptation of Carmilla, which was adapted by Rod Lott and illustrated by Lisa K. Weber, who I liked her art a lot. She did the cover of this. And I thought it looked really cool, and I read it, and it was fine.
Have you read the original?
No, I have not, and I have no intention of reading it after reading this.
It's really short.
This comic was shorter. And it's like, you know, the vampire and, like, people living in, like, Germany and castles and going to balls and stuff and that sort of thing.
Carmilla's the best.
Sure. And then the next one was The Mysteries of Udolpho, and I did not care at all, and I could not finish that, and then I gave up reading this book.
You couldn't even finish the comic?
I could not even finish the comic adaptation. It was the same, like, it was at this point, this was, like, after I'd read the other books, and I also picked up, like, an adaptation of Northanger Abbey, and I got, like, 4 pages into that. I was just like, oh, I see this is, like, a parody of gothic novels.
You should tell the people who can't see what book you're reading that both of those comic adaptations. What's it called?
Gothic Classics.
Okay, I didn't catch that.
It is just called Gothic Classics. It's part of a series called Graphic Classics.
And it's got a bunch of gothic adaptations?
It's got 5, I think, in it. Yeah, 5. It's got Carmilla, The Mysteries of Udolpho, The Oval Portrait by Edgar Allan Poe, another adaptation of Northanger Abbey, At the Gate, which I've never heard of, and then there's like a one-page adaptation of I Have a Pain in My Head, which is a poem by Jane Austen.
I was going to say, actually, you're a prime example of somebody who may not be really into the original gothic fiction with kind of the romanticism and the sublime and the, like, that version of it, but might be really into the version of it that's a little more well, a little more based off of, like, the Dracula era stuff, or, like...
There's definitely, like, if it's when there's monsters in it,
monsters.
That's when I start caring.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, yeah, I've read a bunch of, like, Edgar Allan Poe, and I've read some of the, like, I think I've read Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, mm-hmm. which is kind of, like, mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. fantasy horror gothic stuff yeah. from that period.
So kind of the where it went to with the fantasy horror mm-hmm. gothic as opposed to the original.
And the final one I read was Baltimore Volume 1, The Plague Ships. And this is another comic. And it's written by Mike Mignola, who did Hellboy, and Christopher Golden. And it's drawn by Ben Stenbeck. And this was a lot more. I enjoyed this. And also it was pretty gothic, I thought. Like, it's got a vampire in it. It's set during World War One. This guy is a soldier is fighting in the trenches or whatever. And he comes across these like creepy bat things eating people on the battlefield, like killing them and eating them. And he fights one and it turns into this vampire monster dude. And he's just like, oh, you will regret this. And then this plague happens and all of these people all over Europe start dying and the war just stops because nobody wants to fight anymore. And the soldiers are all just like, I'm going home. And so he goes home as well and discovers that his parents, he goes home to like the creepy castle where he is from. And his parents have been killed by this vampire. And he's really upset by this. And then the vampire, yeah, as you would be. And then the vampire comes back and turns his wife into a vampire. And he has to kill her and his parents. And then he goes off on a hunt to track down the vampire.
This is part of a longer series?
There's six volumes so far. Mm. It's actually kind of an adaptation of a novel that Mike Mignola and Christopher Golden wrote. Huh. Although it's adding a lot of extra stories in between. Because it's like sort of, yeah, it's like a quest novel. And so he's like going all over Europe to try and track down this vampire. And it takes him like a couple years. And so you can just fill in as many stories as you want there.
But a lot of the decaying society and, mm-hmm. you know.
And so he visits different parts of Europe and it's just like all about desecrated churches and like villages that have no economies and all, and just like it's never sunny anymore and everyone has horrible diseases and is dying and so forth. And people are being horrible to each other. So yeah, it's great. I really liked it. No romance at all, because they kill off the wife.
There you go. Therefore.
Yeah, note to listeners, the last genre was historical romance, and we're all traumatized.
There was a little bit. There was an amazing amount of growing when that was announced.
I thought that gothic literature was really funny, because it's the only genre we've had so far where no one immediately was like, oh no, not gothic literature. Whereas for the others, everyone, there's always at least one person who's like, no, not this genre.
We did have a pretty universal okay reaction to doing gothic, but I did, like, when I started reading my first piece, I was like looking at the bright sunshine and going, this is not the right time of year for gothic fiction.
Right when I started reading it, I was like, why can't we do this in November?
Basically, I wanted some clouds and gloom and doom going on in my general environment.
So I guess today is a good day to record this podcast,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's pretty good.
So what did you read, Anna?
So I started The Accursed by Joyce Carol Oates. I was not a good reader in that I haven't finished it yet, though I actually have some faith that I will. I really enjoyed it, but it is also a very long book. I don't remember exactly, 600 and some pages long. And it's kind of slow going, but it's a postmodern novel. It's very recent. It was like 2012, I believe, when it came out. It's one of her most recent books, and it kind of is... She's apparently got a modern gothic series, an ongoing, not exactly a series, but it is her gothic fiction section of her work. So anyways, it's the most recent one in that little section of her work. And, but it was based in the early 1900s, and it has a lot of historical figures from the era, so it's like Woodrow Wilson before he was the president of the United States and while he was president of Princeton. So that's where it's based, in Princeton. And it's got like Teddy Roosevelt is president at the time, and he vaguely shows up in there, and Grover Cleveland is the previous one, and he's a character in there. And there's
And how many of these are turned into vampires?
None of mine. Sorry, other than a number of people died traumatically to some degree. I mean, it's hard to tell. This was an interesting one because in terms of that kind of paranoia and fear, harkens back to that style of Gothic where it's kind of unresolved as to how much is supernatural and how much is not. And it's layered even more so because the actual narrator is a amateur historian from like the 1980s who is supposedly writing this whole thing as a work of history. But of course, it's not written as like a good historical document. Like, he's not a good historian. There's lots of himself in his interpretation and feelings, and there's also lots of just emotion and things that could never come out of the historical record that's presented in there. And there's also little bits of diary that he supposedly found and decoded, because she had used some, like, code to, you know, hide what she was writing in her diary. And then there's the whole tropes of, like, there is this mysterious figure who might or might not be a devil figure who's wandering around seducing the young, innocent, virginal maiden.
Classic.
But I really enjoyed it, and I liked the way the story was building. It's been a long time since I've read something that had this sort of postmodern structure, which is, like, moving all over the place from where you can't really trust the narrator, and who is the narrator, and who is presenting this, and how is it being presented, and there's a bit of these little documentary pieces that are shoved in there, and yeah, it was just very interesting. I enjoyed it, but I'm only like halfway through it still. I've literally borrowed it from two different libraries, as I slowly go through it.
Did you end up buying it too?
Didn't buy that one, did I? Well, maybe I did. I can't remember.
I just know that you like got halfway through this book and then you ended up buying three other Joyce Carol Oates books.
I know,
and
I actually did really.
And I thought you'd read her before.
I'd never read her
and
before.
And then it was just like, you must have either liked this person a lot or desperately need more books for some reason.
Yeah, really heavy ones that I'm going to haul all the way back from San Francisco. Yeah, that was a great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea.
It's all in the past now.
Yes, it's true. That whole, like, hauling books through the airport thing, all in the past.
It's your own personal Gothic story.
Oh, the pain, the trauma. I'm still living through it to this day. That actually reminded me immediately of one of the things that we talked about before, about how the past always haunts these. So I felt it was interesting. This is a book written in 2012 that's done by a historian from the 1980s that's about the early 1900s that involves a curse that from who knows when or might not involve a curse, and a lot of history going along with the Civil War and like a lot of that's feeding into it as well. So it has a little bit of the American Gothic and a little touch of the Southern Gothic, but it's not really Southern Gothic because it is based in, I mean, Yankee land.
I do think it's interesting that none of us actually went to those genres.
Yeah, we all talked about it. And but none of us did it.
None of us did Ontario Gothic or Tasmanian Gothic or the other genres that I'm not sure exist. There's like a whole Wikipedia page that
describes
these.
According to Wikipedia, there's a whole crap ton of subgenres that I'm not sure exist.
The one that I was really questioning was like Gothic science fiction, which I'm like, I think that could exist. This Wikipedia page
doesn't that just like steampunk horror or something?
I think it would be set in like collapsing future societies, maybe.
Hell yeah.
Supernatural occurrences in the future. How do you have...
You can have ghosts in the future.
I guess that's true. Yeah, you can do that.
I think part of that, though, is our selection process. Because I know for me, the only ones I was specific about was the classic ones. Yeah. And then the rest, it was just kind of whatever fell into my arms while I was at the library.
Yeah.
Which is how I pick a lot of books.
So that's how I ended up with my second book. Okay. So it was The Picture of Dorian Gray, and that's the one I finished. Oscar Wilde, late 1800s, 1890s. I don't actually remember when it was.
Well, he was, like, in my book. So he's clearly from that era.
Clearly from that era.
1890s seems about right.
Yeah. So that was the second one I read in and did finish, literally reading the last five pages and the first few minutes of our book club meeting. Like, that's how close I was cutting it on this. And I actually really enjoyed that, although I did have some serious stylistic whiplash regarding it, because I had been, like, desperately trying to finish The Brutal Telling by Louise Penny right before that, which is, like, Canadian, modern Canadian mystery detective fiction, you know, just, like, very current style of writing, you know? And then I pick up The Picture of Dorian Gray, and it just felt so weird. Like I just could not... I was enjoying it from the first moment. I liked how it was written. But on the other hand, I was like, this is very different style.
I've read The Picture of Dorian Gray previously, and I have a hard time reconciling the idea of the book with the idea of gothic literature. Yeah. It's so witty, and it's a comedy, really. Like, it's the whole thing is funny, and the way he talks and all these witticisms. That doesn't reconcile in my head with the idea of the paranoid.
I had a little of that feeling too, and it comes up a lot in the classics of gothic literature or gothic fiction, you know, writing about what is classics of gothic fiction. But I had some of the same sense as you, that it didn't feel particularly gothic through a lot of it. I mean, it has the basic conceit and the way it ends and wraps up at the very end is quite gothic.
Certainly I see it when I think about it, right?
But it didn't feel it when you were reading it so much.
No, it doesn't feel it.
Well, and I thought that was interesting, too. I read some other people's sort of reactions to how did it feel like reading this book to them, and many of them were just talking about how hedonistic and you know, it all was, and I didn't feel that in the same way either, and I'm wondering if that's partially a little bit of the whether or not you're drenched in the style and the culture of the time, and how, so going back again to trying to understand how would readers at the time have experienced this. So I wondered if it was some of that, but also I did find it beautiful language, and I really enjoyed how it was written, and I had fun with it, but I didn't have that same sort of really rich hedonistic sense behind what was in there. I don't know. Maybe I'm jaded like modern readers. I don't know. But that was the second one I read. And I really liked it, but I did have that sort of sense. It didn't feel gothic when I was reading it. It just had some of that tropes within there, but I wonder if that was partially me as a modern reader feeling it that way.
So can we define gothic literature?
Wait, did you read anything else?
No.
Okay.
It didn't. I read a short story, but at the moment I literally can't even remember who it was by or what it was called, so I'm
sure it was Profound.
Maybe it'll make it up into the notes for the podcast episode, but it was good. I don't remember.
Okay, so what is gothic literature? Oh my God. After having read these bits and pieces, after having read the Wikipedia page, we're all now experts.
I guess what we want to ask even more than that is, what is gothic fiction to potential people who would come up and ask us and be like, so I want to read something that feels really gothic, you know? And what do we take into consideration when we get that question?
I think you take into consideration whether the person who is asking you is asking you for a classic or asking you for something more current and modern. Part of the problem I think many of us had as reading classic text was getting into the context and the language and the short story structure, having not prepared ourselves terribly adequately.
There's also the issue that the classic stuff is one of the key tropes of a lot of these was fear of foreigners. And so they can be pretty racist.
Well, and a lot of gender issues in them as well. Misogyny is just
ripe.
Yeah.
But when you think of gothic fiction, you really don't think of the modern subgenres immediately, right? They exist and you could talk about them, with a potential patron, but if someone comes up to the desk asking for gothic fiction, the first thing you're going to think of is the classics, right?
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah. If someone came up and asked me for something that was gothic, I'm thinking atmosphere. I'm thinking a darker story, something that might have supernatural or ghosts or whatever, maybe monsters. But definitely it's more about an atmosphere. It's the feeling of the story rather than...
So you're thinking Libba Bray.
Yeah, Libba Bray maybe. If they're more about the ghost story, if they want something where it's kind of supernatural but doesn't end up being completely so... They want a rational thing in there. Mm-hmm. That's a potential aspect as well. But then, how much murder and incest and stuff they really want in their gothic, or whether they want a more light. Touch,
I'd like. I like the idea that, I just want light incest, not a major
flowers
elephant.
In the attic.
No. So I guess the first thing to do would be to ask questions about what kinds of elements that they are envisioning, whether they're wanting something written in that era, or
they want Twilight.
Could be. I mean, that really could be what some people are interpreting as gothic is. Or it could be something as simple as vampires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what they mean. Because, I mean, you used that in here at one point, talking about, like,
several
it has
times.
Vampires. Yeah. Therefore, it is gothic. So,
yeah. Well, like, no, because I was listening to this radio show about university professors discussing gothic literature and gothic culture. And one of them mentions Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I'm like, no, that's vampire literature.
Yeah.
Like, not gothic literature.
It's the same thing with one of the timelines Owen posted to, where they had Salem's Lot by Stephen King, and then Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire. And well, I can certainly see them within my understanding of gothic and that kind of thing. Vampires in general, I think have moved beyond the gothic.
Yeah,
right. Because I mean, a lot of the elements of gothic novels are like the tainting of the pure, virginal, innocent soul, and the paranoia, and the... Buffy the Vampire doesn't touch on those themes. You know what I mean?
Does it? She dies.
There's no crumbling castle. That's the
right. They all over, like,
there's no haunted house in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I think there's lots of haunted houses in Buffy, aren't there?
Yeah.
It seems like there probably
are. It's not a major theme.
It's just background. All the houses are haunted.
Presume.
What do you think in terms of gothic, would you be more likely to think of classic or of modern literature, Anna?
I probably would tend to immediately, in my brain, think modern. But, I mean, you have to ask the question for them. What do they mean by it? Like, we can't always presume. I mean, we're having plenty of trouble figuring out. Like, we've had this discussion a few times. What is gothic and what do we mean by it and how do we define it? And what, I mean, it's an endless conversation in any genre. What are the boundaries and are they relevant? Mm-hmm. And so you really got to find out what their meaning of it is. But, I mean, I was thinking Shirley Jackson actually occurred to me as pretty quickly as somebody that I would have thought of for that. And probably Anne Rice is somebody that would have come to mind pretty immediately for that. I don't know. Who else?
I think Anne Rice would count solidly as, like, Southern
gothic.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
One of the modern subgenres. Yeah.
I was thinking, though, that even the, like, the modern stuff is still frequently set in the past. And the gothic literature seems to have this obsession with the past, almost. And I was trying to think of ways that you could have a gothic story set in the modern day.
This is what I was going to ask you about earlier. I was thinking of, you mentioned at some point, how would we set, like, gothic in suburbia?
Yeah, well, like, that's what Ontario gothic is, isn't it? Or that's, like, small towns.
Small towns, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, jokingly, it's like you talk about one of the elements of gothic literature is, like, bad lighting. There's always candles going out and stuff. And so I realized that the modern day equivalent would be, like, people not having cell phone reception.
Flickering fluorescent lights and aging malls.
I only have one bar on my phone. I can't get enough data.
Hey, aging malls are perfect. There's your sense of decay and your environment.
Well, that's what the Southern Ontario
is. It? Oh, yeah.
Gothic is. It's like the crumbling old small town buildings, and it's this sense of doom and this sense of stillness that nothing is happening.
Yeah, it's like a society.
I just think we don't organize. I think that there is a lot of fiction out there today, modern literature that's out there that is writing about some of these thoughts and themes and this feeling of decaying, how different society and pieces of society, members of society are decaying within these very modern spaces of the suburban and malls and cities and whatever, but we're not classifying it all together into one thing.
Well, that's why I mentioned earlier. I feel like we've got a lot of genre creep going on with gothic, because when you start saying, oh, well, something that has that theme of, you know, decay and you know, bad lighting or whatever is gothic, then all of a sudden, like, it's your definition is just expanded to, like, literally everything.
But do you think you need that supernatural element to make it gothic?
To make it gothic?
No.
Yes.
Well, do you need the hint implication that it could be, whether or not it is?
Yes.
Whether or not it has a rational explanation at the end, I think the inclusion
there needs
of that
to be an unexplained thing.
So does this feed towards magic realism?
Ooh, I love magic realism.
So do I. Let me just connect everything ever to magic realism.
Eventually, this book club will just be us, like, coming up with increasingly complex ways to justify whatever we just previously read. But, like,
you're already doing that, Matthew.
What do you mean? Of course this, like, Guns, Germs, and Steel is gothic literature. What are you talking about?
The things you read are so convoluted. I don't know where you find your books.
The internet?
Well, I guess in some way when we're... I was I don't know where I pulled this quote from, but it's like, anyway, it's tying Gothic literature to British society, the shift from the Industrial Revolution and the shift from feudal to commercial practices, and it was like, this caused anxiety, and Gothic was an escape, an expression of those anxieties. But you could say that about basically any period.
So yeah, you could say that, like, right now in the UK.
You could say that about The Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
You know?
You just put a ghost in it.
That becomes a little close to what was that movie at the Ghost in the Outfield.
Have we figured it out? What is Gothic fiction? To wrap it up, we have no idea. It could be anything, depending on how strict your definition is.
I don't think it's anything. I think it's better as an overarching sort of umbrella term for a lot of different subgenres that we're going to be eventually reading anyway, and so understanding it as an umbrella rather than a strict, like,
or maybe
slot
a
on
spectrum.
Spectrum,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I read something that talked about it as more of a family of genres than it is, per se, a genre, other than the original early Gothic that really defined it in the early English literature stage of Gothic.
And it's more like a time period.
Yeah, then that's almost a time period reference. Then beyond that, and when we still use the term and we continue to productively use the term as a genre, then it became more of a family of genres.
But that's because so many things grew out of it. And so you have, like, science fiction growing out of Frankenstein.
It's an influence, really.
And you have, like, the weird fiction of, like, Lovecraft growing out of it, and you have horror growing out of it, and you have fantasy growing out of it, and all of these different genres that have spread into many different areas and can still be Gothic fantasy or whatever. There's a genre I didn't see any, like,
what?
Gothic stuff fantasy? Set in, like, fairy kingdoms.
Well, if you think of what Anna just said, where you can think of Gothic as really just a time period, I mean, that makes sense then why all the modern adaptations are really written in the past, right? I think that makes a lot more sense if you think about it that way.
Well, even the original Gothic literature, much of it was set in the past. Mm-hmm. It wasn't current.
Yeah, Cathal of Otranto is set in 12th century.
But even the other stuff, it's like, oh, this book is set, like, written in the 1880s. It's set in the 1820s. We just have no idea.
Yeah. So we'll just put Gothic fiction as a genre as a side.
I'm tired
of arguing about it.
We haven't accomplished our Gothic fiction genre.
I think the question is, would any of us read more of it voluntarily?
On our own?
Yes.
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 Yeah, probably, but probably only by accident as opposed to seeking. Well, I mean, like, it would be something that I happened to read because for other reasons it looked interesting to me than because I was seeking out something that had really Gothic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't read it just because. I'd be selective, right? I liked The Little Stranger, which is a modern adaptation. I like Carmilla. I like, you know, The Picture of Dorian Gray, but, you know, I don't like everything, so I'd be selective.
You don't? What?
I know. Oh, my gosh. We have opinions.
Yeah.
What about you, Matthew?
I guess I could, but I don't.
So, no.
I don't think I would, I don't think I would seek it out, but I guess theoretically I could see myself reading it again, though I feel like more than likely the next time I read something Gothic is when, like, Southern Gothic comes up as our genre of the month for this book club.
Right.
That's not a genre, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. We have, we just earned our explicit rating. it is. We have many a subgenre of subgenre of subgenres in here.
Awesome.
Yes.
Megan, would you read it again, did you say?
Yeah, well, I've said this before, but I read all kinds of things within the Gothic spectrum, the Gothic umbrella already. I enjoy the supernatural, horror, paranormal, fantasy, weird, new weird, all these things. All these
new
things
weird?
That have been,
new weird.
Yeah, it's
bizarro.
Like people writing in the style of Lovecraft. So a lot of China, Mayville, and
got it.
Vanderbilt. I'm not sure I would explicitly seek out the classic stuff, necessarily. I did enjoy reading The Monk when I got into it, but it's got a lot of problems with it that kind of throw you around in terms of the racism and the sexism, so it felt like more like something that I want to read with more structure that would give me understanding of the context of the time and thus all the stuff that's going on that you don't really understand unless someone is like, oh, he's British, and so he thinks Catholics are weird, and that's why all of the religion stuff in here is so, like, catching you off guard because you're not sure if he's making fun of it or not, and you're like, aren't people still respecting religion at this time? I'm not sure what's going on. So in that sense, I think I would leave it for more structured times.
What you just said just reminded me of one of my favorite parts of Anno Dracula, which I feel I have to talk about.
Of course.
Which was, so at one point, one of the characters was talking about people complaining about the new, like, Lord Protector Prince of the British Empire, Dracula, and saying that people are more upset that he's a Catholic, mm-hmm. or that he was a Catholic because he converted to Anglicanism, than that he was a vampire. And so this fear of Catholicism is definitely also can be an element in some of these stories.
Yeah.
That is just something that we're just like, what?
Yeah, that as modern readers just kind of goes over the head.
All right. So let's do an announcement of next time's genre pick.
So we drew this earlier. At random. Multiple randomization levels, in fact.
It's true.
So we had a big list. We have our big list of over 100 genres. I had a machine that prints out things at random, and so we printed out a number of them. I then, without looking at these slips of paper that were printed, put them into envelopes, and then somebody else chose an envelope at random. So we're at multiple, like, we're at meta-randomness at this point.
Yeah, deep levels of convolution, unnecessary.
I think it's totally necessary. And so the next genre is technology nonfiction.
Yeah.
So even, like, our discussions of what is gothic literature are going to pale in comparison to our discussion of what on earth is technology nonfiction about.
I think I got nonfiction down.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was straightforward, but then I started thinking, and I went to the library, and I was looking through, and there's all this stuff about data, and I'm like, is data technology?
And information.
So this is going to be an interesting conversation, I think.
Speculative nonfiction.
Does anyone want to give a preview of what they're going to be reading?
I don't know yet.
I'm halfway through my second book about video games.
Yeah. He happened to have these already, of course.
And I have one about information and the cost of information that I'll be reading as well.
Excellent.
And maybe something else. I don't know. Like, I'm reading the video game one now, and I'm just like, does this even count? And I don't know yet. So we'll see. Some of it counts. This is next month's discussion.
I decided I needed to read something that was more skills-based as well as something that might be more pop science-y or a biography or something, so I've put a hold on a whole bunch of books on Pearl.
And you go professional developing everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
And then I have a bunch of other things on hold, like DVDs about how technology has changed the world from different time periods, like Greek or Roman, to more present stuff, and then I think a book on prosthetics, so we'll see what sort of I'm able to
falls
get through.
Into the trap.
That's a really eclectic mix.
I know it is.
I was a little bit bored one afternoon.
I went a little bit traditional. I just kind of went to the library and checked out the section that I thought seemed relevant. I checked out
the entire section.
I found a couple of books, and I went and explored those areas.
Okay.
So I ended up checking out the new Steve Jobs biography, and by new, I mean the one that was published like 5 years ago, and a couple other related books. I started reading Dataclysm.
I have Dataclysm part two. I don't know if I'll do it.
One of the co-founders of OkCupid. He does all the data analysis of the trends from the website. I'm kind of bored so far, but, you know, we'll see.
We'll see. I have Kit and Clone as well. I did Copeland. We'll see if that. Dataclysm and Kit and Clone. I don't know.
Excellent.
All right.
All right, so stay tuned for our next podcast on technology nonfiction books.
Woo-hoo. You can read them too.
Read them all.
Especially if you never have read one and never want to. You should definitely read this. In reading genres we don't care for.
That's what it's all about.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. You can find us on Tumblr at bookclub4, as in the numeral, m.tumblr.com. On Twitter at bookclub4, the numeral, M. On Pinterest at pinterest.com/bookclub4m. And on Goodreads, where you'll just have to search for the Book Club for Masochists.
On our Tumblr, you can find reviews and thoughts on books that might not have gotten discussed today.
Show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned, and social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
We would like to give acknowledgement to the Vancouver Public Library for the use of their Inspiration Lab. Any faults with the audio quality are representative of our own learning processes.
Come back next time when we inflict upon you the genre of technology nonfiction.
Disgust. They might not have gotten disgust either.
Disgust. So if you're looking for that, check out our Tumblr.